We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. We're so sorry if we caused you any pain. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert.
And that is the number one song in September 1971. And we're going to go back to September 1971 with Paul McCartney and Uncle Albert and Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara
Pryor. How about me?
Yes, from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. That was the number one song in September. Do you remember it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I remember things all around Arkansas from 1971, which I guess we're about to do, right?
Right. We do this from time to time on Pryor Center Profiles, just kind of go into these digitized archives, pick a month, and see what happened then.
Yeah, we're going to do a time capsule from September of 71, and that was when the Remington Arms Company built a plant in Lone Oak, Arkansas. And it's huge as far as, a company coming to our state. It brought Governor Dale Bumpers, Senator John McClellan, and Congressman Wilbur Mills to come and welcome them to our state.
I made a statement yesterday when we dedicated the Globe Union plant in Texarkana that I feel is necessary to repeat today. And that is that I can make one promise to Remington without equivocation. And that is, based on the experience that we've had in this state with other industries who have come to join us, you will be very happy here.
This plant here is a fine example of the best way to solve one of the grave problems with which our nation is concerned today. We have a situation of an imbalance in the economy of our country and an inequitable distribution of the population throughout the land. And one of the ways to correct that, one of the ways to stop the inflow of people into the overcrowded, congested, crime-ridden, polluted metropolitan centers of this nation who are crying for help, one of the ways to do that is to persuade and encourage industry to make its expansions out in the open areas in the rural parts of this nation, like this company has in building its plant here.
When the number of those who are out of work is high, we're all appreciative of the job opportunities that this new industry offers in our state.
That is one of the events from September 1971, Remington's arm plant opening in Lone Oak. It was a big deal.
Oh, it was. And if you drive by, if you're coming from Little Rock to Memphis, you see the plant, but there's also a large tower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and my dad told me about this. He said, that's a shot tower. There are only like 33 of them in the world. And it dates back to the 1700s, but, shots from a shotgun, mm-hmm. The pellets,
mm-hmm.
they pour the lead through a sieve and they drop down into water
mm-hmm.
and they make pellets.
Hmm.
And that's how shotgun pellets and any other kind of pellets are made.
You know what is even bigger than that plant opening is amending the Constitution. And that was happening in September 1971.
The 26th Amendment. When 18-year-olds were able to vote. And Governor Dale Bumpers spoke about the youth vote.
With the war winding down and with the young people being franchised to vote,
the young people in this country will have to face up to a very strong responsibility. The people of this country who have granted them the franchise to vote obviously believe that they have not only the intellect to exercise it, but will exercise it.
26th Amendment lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. You have another cut here about something that was a formidable change in American politics.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, the Supreme Court. There were two Supreme Court members who retired because of their age. And let's see, Hugo Black and John Harlan both retired. And J. Smith Henley, a judge from Arkansas, talked to Channel 7 about it.
My immediate reaction is one of regret at the loss of the service of these two judges who have served the country so long and so well. This does not mean that I or anyone else is in agreement with them all the time, but one must admire and respect them for their service.
Do you have any idea of what direction the court, the new court, might move in, sir?
No, I don't. It's difficult to predict. This depends upon the nominees and upon the development of those nominees after they go on the court. I suppose that it does give the president an opportunity to appoint men who share his thinking on the public issues of the time.
Nixon appointed Lewis Powell and William Rehnquist to the two seats.
Right. And of those four, the two departing and the two arriving, I think Justice Rehnquist's name is the one that is most familiar to people decades later.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
All right, now I'm curious about this next cut, Randy. It's discussing, I guess, a news service that was going to be available in schools?
Yeah, this is a little self-serving because I'm, you know, from KATV. But KATV has always had a relationship with AETN or now, you know, PBS and Arkansas PBS. But we did provide news to ETV, as it was called then, and Lee Reeves talks about it.
Well, this program on Arkansas News, at least a summary, one time a week summary of Arkansas News, was suggested by the Elementary and Secondary Education Group. Many people may think that we just sit up there and decide what the schools shall have, but we have recommendations from subject matter committees, from elementary and secondary curriculum steering committees, and from the higher education steering committees. And they requested that there be some type of news that be put into the school day so that the children that might not have the advantages at home or might not be at a time when they could get the news would get some kind of summary, particularly of Arkansas interest. And in order to do that, we would, since we don't subscribe to regular news service, we would have to cooperate with someone. And of course, Channel 7, not only in this program, but it has in the past helped us so much. They, as you know, helped us to go on the air. We'd have never gotten on, with at least with the money that we did, if it had not been for the contribution of Channel 7. But we now have your cooperation in saving film. And then we're doing a number of interviews on people in Arkansas that helped make the news.
You know, I was in third grade in September 1971 in a four-room school in Midway, Arkansas. So this was completely news to me that this happened. This next cut, Randy, I got to tell you, if I close my eyes and I thought of a bank robbery taking place somewhere between the late 1960s and the early 1970s, you think of a movie, this person who was uncomfortably up close to a bank robbery, his description, I mean, this is exactly what I see in my mind's eye. What can you tell me about what we're about to hear?
This was a bank teller who you know, I guess it's just out of the blue, some guy comes in and robs the bank, and Channel 7 came and asking what happened.
When I got hung the phone up, he pulled out a 38 Smith & Wesson, nickel-plated, and pointed it at me and says, "This is the robbery," and handed me a white sack and said, "Fill this up." And by the time I started taking my cash out of the tills, he hopped over the counter with me there with his gun on me. And he made several threats to us in case a police car showed up. He said he'd kill us all if we pushed any burglar alarms. Said, I'll kill all of you. Well, I began to gather the money up, and he said, "What's in this safe?" And I had most of my money in a bag in that safe. He says, "Open this up." I opened the safe, and I got what money I had in there and put it in his white bag.
This is the value, Randy, of getting these interviews, because that was, you know, and he's such a good storyteller. The guy jumps over, and he's got the gun on him.
It was kind of random, wasn't it?
Yeah, but,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to go from a criminal now to a police officer,
yes.
Bill Mullinax, who
to a cop.
Yeah. He was a familiar name, you know, years later, but at this point in September 1971, he is receiving an award.
Yeah, I knew him as, you know, a spokesman for the state police, and he was quite well known. But yeah, this was when he was a young guy.
He was coming back from Searcy, and he saw a house afire, and stopped and found that there were a number of elderly people in this house. And Sergeant Mullinax, with the help of a couple of other fellows, went into the house, and they were able to rescue six people from the house. Most of these people were bedridden. As a result, the sergeant was overcome by smoke and was hospitalized. But he did an excellent job, and we're real proud of him. Bill, I'm real pleased to tell you that you have been selected as Trooper of the Year.
Thank you, Colonel. Thank you very much.
September is always a time when, you know, if you're in Arkansas, college football is being discussed, and that was no different in 1971, was it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And Channel 7 talked to a guy named Dickie Morton. He was from Dallas. He came, this was his first year, but, you know, he ended up rushing 1,000 yards. And, you know, he was one of the guys that made the big name with Joe Ferguson.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. His mom really got him to come to Arkansas.
One of the real fine offensive runners on the freshman team last year was Dickie Morton, and also this spring. Dickie, I know you were highly recruited. What was the final thing that determined your coming to Arkansas?
Well, my mother really liked Coach Broyles, and she just praised him. And so that's how I ended up here. So
obviously, your mother still influences you to some degree.
Yes.
You got married, what, a couple of days after you got out of high school?
Yes, sir, I did. 2 days, exact.
Is your wife in school up here?
Well, she works at the college and goes to school in the spring 1 hour a day.
How do you work on running? I mean, do you watch anybody? Do you watch film? Do you try to pattern yourself after anybody, Dickie?
No, sir. I just work on my quickness. If you got quickness, I think you can run anything you want to.
How do you go about working on your quickness?
Well, it comes in practice. When you get hand off to you, you try to, you know, give an extra spurt of speed and cut off the blocks.
We're gonna close out with more sports.
This is too funny.
Okay. I know a lot of newcomers
here. Isn't it?
Yes. A lot of newcomers come here, and they can't, you know, the obsession about Razorback football is sort of bizarre to them. I'm telling you, it is not as rabid and singularly focused as it was in the days before cable television and other sports getting, you know, acknowledged. In 1971, it was college football or nothing. And this cut will explain to you a lot. Who is this we're about to hear?
This is Claude Locke. He was a reporter, and he was quite creative.
The latest epidemic in Arkansas is an annual plague known as Razorback Fever. The disease takes many forms, but its most common gender is called Francinosis broilocystitis. Razorback fever, officials tell us, can only be cured in a series of 11 weekly treatments. They recommend Saturday as the best day to be treated due to an overwhelming headache that usually accompanies the weekly dosage. Like many other diseases, razorback fever can be somewhat relieved by many aids, but not cured by them. These prescriptions can be seen all over the state, and they come in many forms.
You can find all of these digitized videos and so many more if you put Pryor Center into a search engine. Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy, this was fun. Thank you.
Okay, see you, man.